Hi, it's Patrick Cox here with the Spanglish Pod.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
If you do a Google Ngram search, you know, searching Google's database of books published in English since 1800, if you do it on the word Spanglish, this is what you get. The word makes its debut in the early 1950s, but it doesn't take off. There are barely any mentions of it at all. It is mentioned a little bit more in the 60s and 70s, and increasingly in the 80s. And then round about 1988, it takes off. It shoots right up the graph. It's mentioned all over the place, and it has continued shooting up that graph ever since. Spanglish, the word, isn't going away anytime soon. But what does Spanglish mean? Different things to different people, it seems. One thing we can all agree on is it is a mix of Spanish and English. Usually, nearly always, a mix of Spanish from the Americas and American English. Sometimes it extends to culture too, as in Miami is a Spanglish city. You might be talking about the languages there and also the culture. But when you observe, when you say that someone is speaking Spanglish, is that a compliment or a criticism? It always used to be a criticism, that's for sure. The implication often being that the speaker didn't use language properly, couldn't speak proper Spanish or proper English. Spanglish was a threat to literacy, to social mobility. And to some, it was a threat to the dominance of English in the United States. It's been cited many times as a reason why English should be declared the official language of the land. That way people would learn English. But then, Spanglish speakers struck back.
You could vote English as the official language, but it'll never work. Because we're always going to speak Spanglish. It's too late. That's all we've talked in our house for years.
¿Qué pasó, tía? I went to the store to buy those zapatos that I like, pero estaban gone. Los shoes amarillos, sí, estaban todos sold out.
This is comedian George Lopez, who happens to speak great English, also great Spanish, pretty sharp Spanglish too. People are a little more relaxed with Spanglish today. Not everyone, but the word Spanglish no longer has only negative connotations, which kind of ties it back with its beginnings. Not the beginnings of the word, but the beginnings of the phenomenon, people in North America mixing the two languages. It started more than a century before anyone used the word Spanglish, at least according to Google Ngram. Here's The Big Show's Nina Pawlczuki.
To truly explore the early roots of Spanglish, we have to go back to the dawn of the dawns.
San Gabriel, 1837.
California, in the early 19th century, when Los Angeles was simply known as the Little Pueblo, and Alta California, as it was called then, was still a part of Mexico.
Buenas noches, señoras y señores. Tonight's story is one that touches the heart of everyone, for it's the romantic story of a young Scotch adventurer who fell in love with California and with one of her beautiful daughters.
That Scottish adventurer was Hugh Reid. He's also the subject of this 1940s radio doc. But in the 1830s, he left the old world for the new, Mexico. And in his adopted home, he was rechristened with an additional Spanish name, Perfecto Hugo Reid. Reid would eventually settle on a ranch in Southern California near the San Gabriel Mission, in what's now Arcadia, a suburb of L.A., where he married a local woman, Doña Victoria.
It's a tale rich in the romance of the rancho.
What'd you have for breakfast today?
Banana and orange and these delicious English muffins from Europane. Oh, they were so good.
Robert Train is a professor of Spanish at Sonoma State University. I met him in the Huntington Library Archives in Pasadena, where he spent the last few years making pilgrimages to read the extremely yellowed letters of Hugo Reid.
Whoa. I'm surprised you could even read these. They're so faint.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It took a long time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Reid was writing to a man called Abel Stearns.
Abel Stearns, Esquire. Pueblo. Referring to Pueblo, the city of Los Angeles. My dear sir, we arrived here after a pleasant journey on the 12th May
Stearns was another gringo. Yes, that was the term around that time. Living in Alta California. He had immigrated from Massachusetts, and he had also become a Mexican citizen. Their letters detail daily life in early California. Reed tells Stearns about his recent trip around other parts of Mexico. It's a pretty ordinary letter at first reading, except listen closely.
To allow the doctor, it's referring to Dr. Keith, the man he was traveling to Mexico with, a little descanso.
Catch that word? Descanso. That's the Spanish word for rest. Hugo Reed wrote to Abel Stearns in Spanglish. Letters upon letters in Spanglish. And that's not to say that he couldn't write strictly in Spanish or strictly in English. He could, and he did. Train has plenty of examples of those. But often, the Scotsman chose to use both at once, doing what Train calls code switching.
It's not about not knowing one language to the other, and that's sort of a myth that some people seem to think, that, you know, code switching is all about not knowing one language. He knew how to say, take a little rest, but he's going beyond sort of the basic sort of communicational level of communicating information, which he could have done easily in English. Instead, he's choosing the Spanish word descanso.
Both Reed and Stearns married native Spanish speakers. Historians don't know for sure, but they assume they spoke Spanish inside their homes. And Reed's correspondence reflects a sort of back and forth, the Spanish words often keying into domestic affairs, like requests from Reed to buy cloth from Abel Stearns' store. Stearns was a merchant. He is credited for starting the port in San Pedro. Of course, they called it San Pedro back then.
Hugo Reed writes, "The old woman requires for the house a piece of percala. Si no hay percala, send her pura manta blanca. I remain, my dear sir, yours truly, Perfecto Hugo Reed."
Percala is a type of cloth called percal, and manta blanca is coarse cotton. But the most curious part of the exchange is not Reed ordering fabric for his wife in Spanish, but what he calls his wife in English, the old woman. It's a direct translation, says Train, of how men in Alta California might have referred to their wives in Spanish. La vieja, the old woman. Okay, so what's the big deal? A few native English speakers spoke Spanglish to each other way back when. What's this have to do with anything today? Simple. Hugo Reed's letters are reminders that California was, is, has always been a multilingual place. In fact, when California became a state in 1850, the new constitution was written in both English and Spanish. And for many years, California laws were written in both languages. But somewhere along the way, English usurped Spanish, and Spanish became, well, a foreign language.
So when you think of going to school in, like, Southern California now, in high school, I learned Spanish as a second language.
Yes.
As a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny. Like, well, Spanish is a foreign language.
It would be funny if it weren't tragic.
Tragic and insidious. We left the Huntington Library to drive in Robert's rental car.
It even has that new car smell, right?
Yeah.
A few miles to the heart of Spanish and Spanglish-speaking Los Angeles, East LA.
Amazing.
We turn on the radio to a Spanish language station, and right there on the dial,
it says FM 1 gives the time, and then foreign language.
Reading the signs as you drive down 3rd Street in East LA, Spanish is far from a foreign language, but the real lingua franca is Spanglish.
So if you look at the sign, it's King Taco, the best food in town, burritos y tacos al pastor y carne asada. Park here.
And so we parked.
Un agua de horchata, por favor.
And ate.
Tamaño regular.
And I couldn't help but eavesdrop on the women sitting at the table next to us. Two young mothers, Desiree Gardenas and Brenda Padilla, and their toddlers. They're speaking Spanish and English and, yes, Spanglish.
Do you ever mix up the languages together?
I do, because we do speak both Spanish and English, so sometimes we'll be like, oh, can you get
stuff allá afuera.
Stuff allá afuera, like outside, but we'll be like, allá afuera. Like, it's just, it's become normal, I guess,
yeah,
to us.
Post-lunch, around the corner from King Taco, Robert and I make one final stop at the Calvary Cemetery. It's a beautiful old cemetery on a hill. Thousands of stone monuments commemorate the early residents of the Pueblo of Los Angeles. And the modern city, with her tall skyscrapers and her smoggy skies, can be seen in the distance. This is where Hugo Reed and Abel Stearns, these early Spanglish speakers, are buried, mere miles from where Spanglish continues to thrive today.
Not a bad place to land.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a, you know, but it's a whole, you know, I read this in part as a whole immigrant story, right? Sort of an unexpected one, maybe.
Hugo Reed died at the age of 42, just 2 years after Mexican Alta California became the 31st state of the Union. Incidentally, in his final days, he became obsessed with saving another language, the language of the Gabrielino Indians, the ancestral language of his wife, Doña Victoria. Sadly, that language has not survived.
All California mourns at the grave of Hugo Reed, a great pioneer and a great man.
For the world, I'm Nina Porzucchi, Los Angeles.
So the idea for this particular podcast episode, it started as more things than you might imagine start at a conference, the Modern Language Association Conference. I was there on the lookout for interesting research. Robert Train, the Sonoma State professor who we just heard from, he was there to talk about the letters of Perfecto, Hugo Reed, and Abel Stearns, and a few others. And so afterwards, Robert and I talked.
The whole myth of people speaking one language, living in one country, living in one place their whole existence, doesn't really jibe up with most of what history has been all about. So in this particular case, I went to two research libraries on the west coast of the United States in California, the Huntington Library in Los Angeles and the Bancroft Library in Berkeley near San Francisco. And I started going through letters written by men who had immigrated from the British Isles or from the east coast of America. They came to Spanish California in the 1830s and the 1840s. Why come to what was really the edge of the known world? You know, I mean, that's sort of the fascinating question. But people did come, but not many of them. And when they came, they learned to speak Spanish.
Yeah. I mean, it's great because you don't often hear that from, you know, what we think of as such a dominant language, English, which was even back in those days pretty dominant. But it does remind me of English speakers in Montreal. I remember doing a story about them a few years ago, and they pepper their language and their discourse among each other, I mean, because it only works among each other, with French expressions. You know, it's just shorthand, and it's a way of building solidarity to a certain degree. Here's this shared vocabulary that only they shared, only native English speakers.
So if we want to think of language use as all about building relationships with people, in this case, strong community relations, in the case of these two Anglo settlers here who were now married to Mexican citizens, and they themselves become Mexican citizens, that furthered their business interest as well, their livelihood, if you were, you know. So all that is part of what this changing from one language to another does. And it's always been that way.
Yeah, we don't think of Spanglish as having much history.
Absolutely, but there's a huge history of it. And it's also instructive because, unfortunately, all too often, is that we really have sort of blotting out of a long history of relationships being built in this country between speakers of different languages, all under this sort of the dominant narrative, the United States is an English-speaking nation.
So how long did this continue for in Southern California until English took over?
Well, this is interesting, and I mean, the sad part is that this was a very small window. So really talking about people like William Edward Hartnell, who arrived in the early-ish 1820s on the California coast. He settled in Monterey, which was then the capital. Abel Stearns, who arrived probably about 1830, somewhere in there, in Los Angeles. We have Perfecto Hugo. And this was really the time when there were relatively few immigrants from other places, still very much a Mexican and then indigenous population. All that began to change in the 1840s dramatically, and then in 1849, then when you had gold discovered. And it was also an act of politics to Andrew Jackson and other officials in Washington who made it a political objective to make California part of the United States. It was a real conquest. It took shape as a military conquest sort of in its last stage in the mid-1840s. But before that, there was a whole politics of making sure that as many immigrants came from the other side of the United States, the English-speaking side of the United States, into California. So it was almost sort of a de facto settlement program. And many of these later immigrants in the 1840s really were not interested so much in the acculturation to Spanish ways. We have less intermarriage. And then you have, in the mid-1840s, the Bear Flag Rebellion, where a group of recent Anglo-American settlers decided that they would create their own English-speaking republic, and they imprisoned then the local Mexican officials. And it didn't last very long, but it was that first sort of gesture of aggressivity where we no longer want to be considered as Mexican citizens. We no longer want to be considered as even Spanish-speaking necessarily. And then that was at the time of the war, and there was actually an armed invasion that led to the surrender of California, and then the famous Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which then ceded territories that were now Arizona and New Mexico and California to U.S. government for a paltry sum of money.
Robert Train, professor of Spanish at Sonoma State University. More Spanglish to come in future pods, that's for sure. And more on what you heard here today. More visuals, photos of those 19th century letters written in Spanglish, along with Nina's modern-day Spanglish tour of Los Angeles. All of that's at pri.org/language. Or, if you prefer, at the World in Words page on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter. My handle is Patricox, PatriCox. And there are pods galore of the Soundworks Podcast Network. Go to soundworks.org. Thanks for listening.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.